The UK says Saudi Arabia's crown prince is no longer expected to attend Queen Elizabeth's funeral after the decision to invite him drew criticism over his human rights record. The UN says Israel has demolished nearly 45 Palestinian structures in the occupied West Bank and outputs in the past 2 weeks. Typhoon Nanmadol makes landfall southwest in Japan, as authorities urge millions of people to seek shelter from the powerful storms, rains, and wind. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is no longer expected to attend Queen Elizabeth's funeral. British Foreign Office source said that the change in plans was made by Saudi Arabia without mentioning any reason. The British government faced a barrage of criticism for inviting the Crown Prince to attend the Queen's funeral. The criticism mainly centered around bin Salman's role in the murder and dismemberment of dissident Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. His fiancée called for bin Salman to be arrested for murder when he arrived in London. A number of rights campaigners also cited excessive domestic repression and Saudi Arabia's deadly war against Yemen. They said that the occasion would give bin Salman another chance to whitewash his human rights record. According to sources, another Saudi prince will represent the kingdom at the funeral. Shock and outrage has spread across the British black community as an investigation into the police shooting of an unarmed black man in South London has begun. Chris Cabot was killed at the start of the month, and his death, as many activists claiming, was an unjust killing by a racist police force. Rob Carter reports from the latest protests in London.
British police have found themselves embroiled in another racism scandal, this time surrounding the killing of an unarmed black man in South London by armed officers on the 5th of September. Following an alleged police pursuit, 24-year-old Chris Carber was behind the wheel of a car dimmed by two police vehicles in a narrow street before one round was fired, ending his life. He leaves behind a fiancée and an unborn child. No gun was found in the car. Thousands of protesters have descended outside police headquarters in central London to vent their fury over what they say is gross injustice being carried out by the authorities against Chris and his family. Accusations are swirling around, some of which include that the police who stopped Chris on that fateful day may have known who was inside the car in the lead-up to the fatal shooting. This is, of course, all being investigated, but the protest organisers have made absolutely clear that they are going to refuse to back down until the demands of the family are met and justice be served. Fighting back the tears, family members spoke of their ordeal after seeing the body for the first time since the killing.
On behalf of the family, I want to thank everyone for coming. Mum and dad couldn't make it. Emotionally, it was just too much for them. But they did send a message saying thank you and that they appreciate all your love and support and your kindness, and it means the world to them, especially during these trying times. As you know, a lot of you know that yesterday we did go to see the body.
News of the shooting has caused uproar, especially in the black community. They feel this was just another example of a racist system out to harm them.
Do you know what? Thank goodness that they've decided not to arm the entire police force, because if that was the case, then I think that would be a cause for concern. Because obviously they're demonstrating themselves to be quite trigger happy.
Following the backlash, the officer responsible for the shooting has been suspended. An investigation is also underway, but the police watchdog warned it could take 9 months to reach a conclusion. The family expressed anger at the lengthy wait. However, the question of race playing a role will be examined as a factor, providing some small hope that the family's demands will be answered. Robert Carter, London.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. The Israeli regime keeps demolishing Palestinian homes as part of its land grab policy. According to the UN, Tel Aviv authorities have destroyed 44 homes in the occupied West Bank, including in Al-Quds, in the past 2 weeks alone, about 20 of them without prior notice. As a result of the latest demolitions, dozens of Palestinians have become homeless. Israel routinely destroys Palestinian structures for the lack of permits that are next to impossible to obtain. It also destroys the homes of Palestinians who are involved in anti-Israel operations. Human rights campaigners call the move a collective punishment. The demolitions are also seen as part of efforts to make room for settlements. Let's get the latest on this from Mona Candela, correspondent who joins us from occupied Ramallah. Also, Saad Nimr joins us, Dr. of Political Science from Birzeit University, also joining us from occupied Ramallah. Welcome to you both. Mona, tell us about the latest demolitions, please.
Well, according to a recent report by the United Nations Office for Humanitarian Affairs here in the occupied territories, OCHA, Israel has destroyed 44 structures and homes owned by Palestinians in Area C and in Al-Quds, in occupied Al-Quds, in the last 2 weeks. Why Israel destroys these Palestinians' homes? According to the Israeli regime, the Palestinians had built their homes without Israeli-issued permits. When Palestinians go to get the Israeli-issued permits, the Israeli regime refuses to give Palestinians. So under unjustified reasons, the Israeli forces destroy these homes, forcing the Palestinians to leave their homes. At the same time, they do not give the Palestinians Israeli-issued permits, because at the end of the day, the Israeli authorities want to confiscate these the lands where these Palestinian homes had been built, maybe because these lands were very close to the illegal settlements, or the Israeli regime wants to use these lands for settlers-only roads to expand the settlements, build in new settler units, or even to use the lands for military purposes. So under these unjustified reasons, lack of Israeli-issued permits, for the main reason or for the real reasons, confiscation of land, expanding illegal settlements, the Israeli forces continue to destroy Palestinian homes. And we have to mention that Area C is supposed to be under full Palestinian control. However, Area C is under Israeli military control.
So when we take a look at this act of demolishing homes, Saeed Nimr, within that act, there's so many illegal violations that are taking place. Basically, not only taking the home from civilians, you're also producing taking the land away and using it for other motives. And within all these different consequences, Palestinians' rights are being violated. Where do we stand when it comes to these types of violations in terms of the international community, or lack of action by them, I should say?
In fact, the Israeli, this is part of a systematic ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. The whole idea for the Israelis is to make life impossible for the Palestinians and really, really very hard to live. And one of the policies that they are adapting in the West Bank is to demolish houses in area called C, which is supposed to be under their jurisdiction, under the pretension that they don't have permits. And yet the Israeli don't grant permits to the Palestinians in the first place. So the villages and the towns and the areas, with the increase of the population, there is nowhere to go. And they need more houses, so they need sometimes to build a house, even if it is on their own land, in order just for the expansion of the families. And yet the Israeli come and demolish the houses. Not to mention Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a very special case where the systematic demolishing of houses is taking far more even numbers. We are talking about more than 8,000 houses were demolished since 1967 in Jerusalem alone, which means that, you know, a huge number of Palestinian population in Jerusalem, the Jerusalemite, have to get out of Jerusalem perimeter because they don't have permits. And consequently, the end came as they built on an area called Kfar Aqab, which is supposed to be, it's outside the wall, but it's supposed to be part of Jerusalem. And now we have a kind of a town there with more than 100,000 living there, but it is absolutely not organized. There's no permits and no streets, adequate streets or even facilities. The Israeli, they don't care about this area and they don't do anything about it. And yet at the same time, they don't allow the Palestinian Authority to be in that area or to organize it. So we end up with more than 100,000 Palestinians from Jerusalem. They live in this area. outside the wall in order just to preserve their ID card and to keep in, because otherwise the idea of demolishing the houses in Jerusalem is to ethnically cleanse Jerusalem from the Palestinians, and that was the consequence of that, what they are doing. And this policy is a kind of a collective punishment against the Palestinians, especially those who are involved in any kind of activities against the Israeli army, especially in the operations. And what is the problem with the family to suffer because of that? You know, this is the Israelis. You know, this is against the law, and this is totally a violation for Geneva Convention in taking care of the citizens under the occupation. But the Israelis, they don't care about the international law. They don't care about the human rights or the human laws at all, because by the end of the day, as you said, the international community not responding at all, and they see all these kind of atrocities against the Palestinian, yet they don't do anything to prevent Israel, or even to criticize or even to punish the Israelis for these violations of the human rights, as well as for the international law and the Fourth Geneva Convention. The international community is definitely with a double standard. If anything happened anywhere else, immediately you will see that they are, you know, going and criticizing and taking measures and imposing sanctions and do all the things that they wanted to do. But when it comes to Israel, it's apparently Israel is a country above the law, and they don't do anything or take any kind of action against the Israeli, and show how hypocrisy these kind of regimes are in the international community.
Sure. Mona, I'm curious, because there's so many demolitions that do take place, whether you have come in contact with any of the families, whether you've spoken to them, or that you have come somehow cross paths with them to see what they do, where do they go, what do they do about their housing situation, since there's so many of them that are dealt this fate.
Well, in many cases, Palestinians had to live in tents on the rubble of their homes that had been destroyed, especially that the Israeli authorities state that in case these homes had been demolished, Palestinians are not allowed to rebuild on their land new homes. So in some cases, they have to stay in tents until they are able to rebuild the new homes in other areas, of course, or they can go to relatives in these areas. Palestinians, many times before, had, let's say, challenged built their homes again and again, and the Israeli forces had to leave them until they continue building their homes. Then they come and destroy their homes. Many cases happened, and even the recent homes that had been destroyed without even without any further notices to the Palestinians. So it's hard for the people, but at the same time, they continue to remain living and until the Israeli authorities force them out of their land, then they have nothing to do.
Thank you for that. Mona Kandil there from Occupied Ramallah. Also, Saad Nimr, thank you so much. Professor of Political Science from Birzeit University. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review. Thank you for tuning in. Powerful typhoon has pounded southern Japan, putting some regions on the highest alert level. The government has urged nearly 2 million people to seek shelter in a rare special warning as Typhoon Nanmadol heads towards the north. The weather agency is warning of unprecedented storms, high waves, and record rainfall. No major damage or injuries have been reported so far, but strong winds and heavy rains have caused vast blackouts and paralyzed ground and air transportation. Nanmadol is expected to turn east and reach Tokyo on Tuesday. The death toll from border clashes between Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan has risen to 81 as the fragile ceasefire between the two countries enters its second day. The clashes began last week after both sides accused each other of deploying military reinforcements at the border. Following the escalation, the two sides held talks on Friday and agreed on a ceasefire. However, both have repeatedly accused each other of violating the agreements. In a phone call with the Kyrgyz and Tajik leaders, the Russian President Vladimir Putin urged the sides to prevent further escalation and peacefully resolve the situation. Iran has also called on both countries to settle their differences through dialogue, voicing readiness to help the two sides end the conflict. The European Commission has called for the suspension of some 7.5 billion euros in funding for Hungary over corruption.
The Commission is proposing measures to the Council for the protection of the Union budget against breaches of the principles of the rule of law in Hungary. This case started when the Commission notified Hungary in April earlier this year about our concerns relating to breaches of the principles of law, rule of law, that create, and this is important because it's about the scope, a risk for the EU budget. This concerns
Hahn said the decision is clear demonstration of the Commission's resolve to protect the EU budget. This is the first such case in the 27-nation bloc under new sanction meant to better protect the rule of law. If the majority of EU member states back the proposal, the move will affect Hungary's so-called cohesion funds. Such finances are given to poor European countries to help promote growth and employment. Hungary has pledged to meet all of its commitments made to the European Commission to unlock the funding. The EU has long accused the conservative government of Viktor Orbán of corruption and undermining democracy. Orbán denies that Hungary is any more corrupt than others in the EU. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Listeners Special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, September 18, 2022. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Here, on behalf of all IRIB English radio staff, I express my condolences on the occasion of Arba'in, which this year happened to be yesterday, September 17th. For your information, Arba'in is 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, as well as his companions in the year 61 AH. Stay with us, please. This is Listeners Special, and Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio programs. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Ivan Zeleny from Russia, Najmuddin from India, and David Moby from Finland. And of course, we've received many emails from around the world, which I mention some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read these emails. Mohammad Khaku from the US has sent us an email on the occasion of Arbaeen. Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. From Italy, we've received an email from Simone Santini. And the last but not the least is an email from Rob den Boer from the Netherlands. Please stay with us. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we have an email from Mohammad Khaku from the US. Mohammad Khaku says, "The concept of pilgrimage exists in all major religions. However, not many know about the pilgrimage to Iraq and the walk from the city of Najaf to Karbala on the occasion of Arbaeen. 40 days after the martyrdom anniversary of Shia's third Imam, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, millions of Muslim worshippers converge in Iraq's holy city of Karbala as part of the annual pilgrimage. Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, was martyred in Karbala on a day which became known as Ashura, the 10th day of the Islamic month of Muharram, having refused to pledge allegiance to the corrupt and tyrannical caliph of the time, Yazid. In the day of Arbaeen, Shia and Sunni Muslims, even Christians, partake in both the pilgrimage as well as serving of devotees. No such an event exists in the world with such a frequency and magnitude. This is the largest peaceful gathering which many people probably never heard of it, and many Western media have failed to cover or deliberately censor. Arbaeen is newsworthy because of a unique and exceptional 55-mile walk. Millions will walk for 3 days during the day and night time with the scorching desert sun bearing down upon them. The volunteers, doctors, and devotees distribute free food and drinks by the roadside and have tents for medical attention, relaxing, sleeping, and washing. The event of Arbaeen is largely self-organizing. However, the event is well secured and superbly managed by the authorities. The mood of the pilgrimage is one of intense piety, unity, and solidarity. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Mohammad Khaku from the US, and many thanks for writing this email to us, actually this detailed email to us. You gave us great information about the occasion of Arbaeen. Recently, I had a trip to Karbala, Iraq, and participated in the ceremony, and what you described actually came in front of my eyes. It's a really great event. I cannot describe it, and words really fail me in describing this event. Mohammad Khaku from the US, again, thank you for writing this great email to us. Please write to us soon. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card to you as verification. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Let's see what Eddie says. Many thanks for your quick reply to the listeners. I'm very glad to read your email. I know Iran since long time. When I was only a child, my father would often refer to the word Persia. Later, I found out that it means the country which we now know as Iran. So, for me, Iran is not only dear and famous for its carpet, but also is interesting for me for its historical relationship with my country. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, and IRIB English Radio to you, Eddie Witanto from Indonesia. Please accept our warm gratitude to you for writing this email to us. It's great that you know about Iran. IRIB English Radio is a good source of information for you, Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, to know more about the land of Iran, about the Iranian people, and the developments in our country, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Eddie Witanto from Indonesia, many thanks again. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And here we've received an email from Simone Santini from Italy. Let's see what Simone says. Dear staff, I have a very great pleasure in sending you a reception report about your English broadcast I heard a few days ago. I'm using a receiver with a long wire antenna. My station is located in Prato, Central Italy. I listened to the music followed by news program in which the speaker mentioned Italy and various facts regarding energy and gas cost. Also, I listened to a program about an Iranian national hero in the time of British occupation, which I enjoyed a lot. Hoping you will confirm this report. Best regards from Italy. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, Simone Santini from Italy, and please accept our appreciations to you for writing this email to us. It's also a pleasure for us to receive a reception report from you, Simone. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a verification. We wish you all the best, and we are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio is received by you and in your region, Simone. And we are so glad that you told us your views about IRIB English Radio programs, including the programs, as you said, that was about an Iranian national hero in the time of British occupation, as well as programs about various facts regarding energy and gas costs around the world. So please accept our appreciations to you. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Simone Santini from Italy. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands has sent us an email. Rob says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, my name is Rob Den Boer and I live in the city of Hainaut, Netherlands. It is with pleasure that I hereby confirm your broadcast. Please listen to audio file attached. If this report is accepted as correct, please send me your verification. Thank you so much." Salam and greetings to you, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, one of our regular listeners, and thank you very much for sending this email to us. We are glad that our signals are heard in your region, in your city, Hainaut, Netherlands. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, and please accept our EQSL card as a verification. Thank you. And here we come to the end of this edition of Listener's Special. But before saying goodbye, I, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, express my condolences on the occasion of Arba'in, which this year happened to be yesterday, September 17th. And for your information, Arba'in is the 40th day after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, as well as his companions, in the year 61 AH. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us. Have a good time and goodbye.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the minbar you are listening to. May Allah accept your mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
We started a topic and I wasn't able to finish it last night. Inshallah, tonight we will finish it. And I will go over just the main points that I covered last night as well, inshallah. And that had to do with this whole idea of, okay, we see Imam Hussein, what he did has lasted till today. Nothing can get in the way of it. And when we look around us, we see that there's a lot going on, but why is it that there's one thing out there that has lasted this long? Other things similar to it don't last long. They haven't lasted long. All right, let's move on to tonight now, what we want to talk about. The different elements in this story, the variety, just how Imam Hussein, like, he has everything in there for anybody who wants to relate to any aspect of this movement. All right, you look at the faces, you see new faces. Hur bin Yazid, oh, well, welcome. You were on Yazid's side, it's all good, you come on our side. So I'm a new face to the community, so what? Old faces, Habib bin Mudahir, Muslim bin Awsaja, these people. Converts, Wahhab, yes, different colors of people, yeah, they say Joan and these ones. All right, so everybody is there. Age-wise also, you have it all. Habib is old, Qasim is young, Abdullah bin Hassan, everyone, they're the young, old, 13-year-old, 18-year-old, 10-year-old, 6-month-old. He has everything in there for everybody to be able to relate to it. To the extent that, I mean, this is when Allah is the planner. Look how beautiful it's planned. On the night of Ashura, they were going to attack. Imam Hussein said, give us a little opportunity till tomorrow. I personally think there was some philosophy here as well. Not just that Imam Hussein says, I want to spend the night in worship. That he wanted to do that as well. But think about it. In the nighttime, you can't even see what's going on. Nothing will be recorded properly. It'll be over in a heartbeat. And then it'll be forgotten. Imam Hussein says, let's wait till tomorrow. If you're not going to do anything, give us that opportunity. And then tomorrow, when they have that initial attack and tens die on the side of Imam Hussein, still, he manages to figure it out in a way that he's able to send them one by one. So each tragedy is a tragedy of its own. Here today, we sit, the first 10 days, we talk about each of these shuhada. There's so much to talk about. If it happened all of a sudden and it was over, we wouldn't have. This is all the plan of Allah. So when you line things up with Allah's will, the plan of Allah is going to work. It's going to take effect. But you have to have ikhlas. Imam Hussein is the pinnacle of ikhlas. And so when all of that happens and Imam Hussein is leading the way, you have this. You have the women, Zainab alayhi salam, the wife of Zuhair. Right? You have these ones who pushed forward, the ones who didn't want to come. And if they didn't come, they themselves went. Bibi Zainab, of course, Abdullah bin Ja'far didn't come for whatever reason it was. Bibi Zainab still came. Zuhair wasn't sure, should I not? His wife pushed him to go. You've seen Mukhtar Nama, probably some of you. You've seen that part. She forces him to go. Forces him meaning convinces him to go. But in the beginning, she had to use some force. And so there's so many lessons in here. Wahab. The only female shaheed of Karbala who went and died with her husband fighting. Yeah? All of this, you have all of that. You have people that weren't like proper Shia. Zuhair himself, was he proper Shia? No, there was no Shia Sunni back then, of course, but in the sense that we have it today. But what you did have was Uthmanis, they called them back then. You know what that means? That means a person who says that what happened to Uthman and all of that was wrong. They're on that side. Zuhair is one of them. He's famous for that. He's on the side in the camp of Imam Hussein. So anyone, the one who's committed big sins, whatever, everyone has something to relate to on Ashura and in the army of Karbala. And so this is another thing that we have that we don't find elsewhere. Usually movements has people that are like-minded. That's it. This has everyone in it because this is the beauty of Ahli Kisa, brothers and sisters. The five, the Panjatan, these five were very, very special. Imam Hussein knows this. So he's able to bring everybody in. It's so beautiful. The barakat of these five. And of course, he's the last one. So this is the last opportunity, by the way. Imam Sajjad could not have done what Imam Hussein did on Ashura. He could not have brought in those that Imam Hussein brought in. The next one. The next element. Pure haq. I've said this again and again. Ashura embodies pure haq versus pure batil. Haq, this is just what haq is all about. Wherever there is haq, you will have everlastingness. The Quran says, قُلْ جَاءَ الْحَقِّ وَزَهَقَ الْبَاطِلِ إِنَّ الْبَاطِلَ كَانَ زَهُوقًا. Say, O Prophet, tell them, haq has come. And so batil is going to leave now. إِنَّ الْبَاطِلَ كَانَ زَهُوقًا. Batil is always going to be going out. Is everlasting. Haq, in one way or another, is connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which is the haq. And so however much our actions, our deeds and endeavors enjoy haq, inshallah, to that extent, they enjoy everlastingness. And then here I am, mixing it up with whatever other intentions I have, and I say, how come I didn't get famous? How come this? How come that? It's not about these things. And it's going to be harder in this day and age when you're even praying. Sometimes you take a selfie, you put it up online, right? Like, people got to know what I'm doing. No, I would say ikhlas and haq, they come hand in hand. Another matter to discuss when it comes to this haq, though, is that just because you're on haq doesn't necessarily mean, yes, that... Yeah, I wanted to say this. This is an important point. that haqq and ikhlas, although they come hand in hand, we have to be careful. These are two different things. Yes? If there is haqq, ikhlas has to be there. But if ikhlas is there, it doesn't necessarily mean haqq is also there. Going back to what we talked about us being fallible beings. Imam Ali in Nahj al-Balagha, he says something, sometimes you're like, Imam Ali, are you taking the side of the Khawarij? As if. He says it. He says they have ikhlas. He says in Nahj al-Balagha, anyone has a problem with that? Go see what Nahj al-Balagha says. He's calling out Muawiyah to show where Muawiyah stands on that spectrum of haq versus batil. He talks about the Khawarij. Imam Ali. He says the Khawarij, what their problem was, they aimed for haq, they missed it. They missed the target. That means ikhlas. They're after the haq, they missed the target. And so what is that? That makes them wrong. But they still had ikhlas, according to that. Now, of course, I don't know if it'll be accepted because, I mean, Imam Ali, the haq himself is in front of you. Come on. But the point I'm trying to make is this. He says that Muawiyah, though, he aimed for batil and he hit the target in the middle of the eye, in the middle of the forehead between the eyebrows. Yes? So we just have to remember this all the time. Just because I have ikhlas doesn't mean haq is going to come with it. Yes, if I have haq and everything, part of haq is ikhlas. But vice versa? No. Right now, the Maraji, for example. Regarding moon sighting, let's say. Huh? Are they both on haq? The one that says if it's sighted like this? No, one of them is wrong for sure. But they both have ikhlas, it'll be accepted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, inshallah. I just want to highlight this again. Just remember, brothers and sisters, it's not just ikhlas either. We have to do our due diligence to figure out what we're supposed to do in different scenarios. Oh, Hussein, you live forever.
To Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. A new book by the New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman has claimed that in the days after Joe Biden defeated him in the 2020 election, former President Donald Trump told an aide he was just not going to leave the White House. Stay with us for more details. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story. The Guardian says, in the days after Joe Biden defeated him in the 2020 election, former President Donald Trump told an aide he was just not going to leave the White House, according to a new book on his presidency and its chaotic aftermath. We're never leaving, Donald Trump vowed to another aide, says the book from New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman. The book is titled Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America. How can you leave when you won an election? CNN, where Maggie Haberman also serves as a political analyst, said on Monday it reviewed reporting for the book, set for a 4th of October release, and published new details on Donald Trump's insistence that he intended to stay at the White House despite his electoral loss to Biden. The book reports Trump being overheard whining and asking Republican National Committee chairperson Ronna McDaniel, "Why should I leave if they stole it from me?" None of Donald Trump's predecessors had ever threatened to remain at the White House after the end of their presidencies. The only remotely close parallel was the former First Lady Mary Todd Lincoln, who remained at the White House for just a few weeks after the assassination of her husband, Abraham Lincoln, in April of 1865, according to Maggie Haberman's book. Donald Trump's private bluster about refusing to move out of the White House contradicted public statements he made to reporters less than a month after the election that he would certainly leave if Biden's victory over him was certified. "I will, and you know that," Donald Trump said, though he insisted electoral fraudsters had robbed him of beating Biden. Additionally, Maggie Haberman's book portrays Trump as picking the brains of virtually everyone in his orbit for their thoughts on his camp's idea and how to keep him in the Oval Office despite Biden's win. Among those consulted was the valet who would ferry Diet Cokes to Trump whenever he pressed the red button on the presidential desk in the Oval Office, according to the book. Donald Trump, of course, eventually relented and moved out on the same day as Joe Biden's inauguration, sparing authorities from having to forcibly escort him out of the White House at the behest of the new president. Trump supporters who bought his lies that he'd been defrauded of victory in the 2020 race staged a deadly U.S. Capitol attack on 6th of January 2021. A bipartisan Senate committee report linked 7 deaths at the violence on that day, which was aimed at preventing the congressional certification of Joe Biden's victory. Federal prosecutors later filed criminal charges against more than 800 participants, many of whom have already been convicted and sentenced to prison. A bipartisan House committee earlier this year held a series of public hearings making the case that, among other things, Donald Trump apparently violated federal law when he ignored pleas to take action that would halt his supporters' assault on the Capitol. Later on Monday, the New York Times reported that the Justice Department had issued about 40 subpoenas over the past week seeking information about the actions of Trump and his associates related to the 6th of January 2021 attack. 2 of Donald Trump's advisers have had their cell phones seized, according to the New York Times. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story, but from a different angle. Congresswoman Liz Cheney said Donald Trump's unwillingness to leave the White House after being defeated in the 2020 presidential election affirms the reality of the danger of his efforts to overturn the election. Liz Cheney made the remarks in response to revelations made in a new book by New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman, which claimed that the former president told his aides that he would remain in the White House even after Joe Biden's inauguration. According to Maggie Haberman's soon-to-be-released book, Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America, the 45th president reportedly told his aides, "I'm just not going to leave the White House. We're never leaving. How can you leave when you have won an election?" Liz Cheney, who is one of 2 Republicans on the House Select Committee investigating the 6th of January Capitol riot, said it wasn't surprising that those are the sentiments that Donald Trump reportedly expressed. In a lot of ways, people say it wasn't as dangerous as it really was, she told CNN on Monday. Liz Cheney added, and when you hear something like that, I think you have to recognize that we were in no man's land and territory we'd never been in before as a nation. And if you have a president who's refusing to leave the White House, or who's saying he refuses to leave the White House, then anyone who sort of understands aside and says someone else will handle it, is themselves putting the nation at risk. Because it's clear that when you're at a moment that we faced, everyone's got to stand up and take responsibility, Liz Cheney said. I think, again, it just affirms the reality of the danger.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghodde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Basing country issues on others is wrong. Pay attention to the domestic capacities. This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the president and members of the cabinet in Imam Khomeini's Husseiniyya on August 30th, 2022. Another purpose of Government Week is the opportunity it provides to address the government that is at work. This means we need to deal with the current issues facing the government. We need to think and talk about this. We need to think about strengths and weaknesses. Those who ponder over matters should think about these things and learn from them. This is a great custom that we have Government Week every year. It is an opportunity to think, talk, and make decisions about government affairs. Now, about this second purpose, I would like to talk about some things in two parts. God willing, I shall try to speak about these matters briefly.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The first is in reference to some of the achievements you've made. I mean the things that are, in my opinion, are truly some of the successes you've achieved. Apart from this, there is the report of the practical work that the gentlemen have mentioned, some of which are very important, but please allow me to present my view of your achievement. I would also like to make a few suggestions in one part. With regards to achievements, I believe the most important thing this government has achieved is that it has revived hope and trust in people. This is your greatest achievement. Both the president and the officials in different departments have given the people this feeling that the government is out there in the field and it is busy working and struggling to solve problems and provide services to them. These measures have revived hope and trust in the people to a great extent. In some cases, these efforts have also had tangible results that the people have witnessed themselves. For example, improvements in the health sector, diplomacy, and some cultural sectors have shown clear, distinct result.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.